fairly realistic that they're going to establish the corridor, and their plan is to establish it where probably we believe it belongs. And what if, and I guess maybe waiting for their answer is a good idea, but what if the pilot then stems off of that? It's now established. How do we want to make people use it?
And I think after it's established, we can still create a process by which we can compel people to, yeah. Their first option is to yeah. work with, again, if it's owned and operated by Umatilla Electric, then you go talk to Umatilla Electric. Yeah. They're the ones you talk to. And if you use that line, then our consideration of your SIP agreement is elevated. I mean, I think that becomes the fine. And I think we could still achieve that pilot project, whether it's already built or not.
Right.
But if it's already approved and the permit is in place, I think that is a that there's more certainty around that for the project than if we make this a big public process and invite people, from Le Grand that might participate in this.
Yeah, and that person might or will participate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to keep this as local as possible, and so I would suggest we wait for Jerry and Robert to.
Okay, I'll work with the two of them and kind of see.
And then after, maybe we have another conversation. Now that it's established, do we want to build around?
How do we create an incentive for people to yeah. use the green energy corridor?
Yeah. Yeah,
and again, I think we can do that through the SIP agreement. I mean, if you just somebody comes in and makes application, you tell them up front that we're trying to establish this green energy corridor, so we don't have the spaghetti effect plastered all over our county, and that you still have that option to do the spaghetti effect, but our board of commissioners has the option on SIP agreements to be hard or easy,
right,
or non-existent,
right? Yeah, yes, no, or somewhere in between.
Yeah.
So perfect. That helps a lot in knowing kind of where to go. I appreciate your commentary. The IOWN Urban Growth Boundary Expansion. So this actually is a project that was started a number of years ago. We did a land petition to facilitate the grain growers being able to acquire some property. At the time then, we knew that IOWN wanted to bring it into the UGB because they want to annex it. And the grain growers has agreed to the annexation. But people get busy and things get prioritized or not. And so this kind of fell off IOWN's radar screen for a while. It's back on. Linda LaRue, as the previous mayor, is now completing this work. So I've met with her a couple times. She's developing the application. It's about 9 acres of expansion of the urban growth boundary and about 18 acres that we're zoning and rezoning, most likely to our rural light industrial, so that when annexed, they can convert it to one of their own, probably their commercial district, to support the development. It's the relocation and expansion of the grain grower facility there in IOWN. So it's a good project from just the city's urban growth boundary perspective, their city limits, and then economic development for the community. So we're kind of excited about that.
What necessitates the joint meeting?
Right. So the joint meeting, so when you do an urban growth boundary expansion, you are affecting kind of the jurisdictional boundary of both entities, the county and the city. So we can do them as separate hearings, but it means we notice and we staff 4 hearings, 2 for the city of IOWN and 2 for the county, the Planning Commission and Board of Commissioners. For them, it's 2 hearings, but they don't have a Planning Commission, so it's City Council and City Council. The Planning Commission has agreed to do a joint hearing, and it would be a special hearing for the Planning Commission where they would, and I said, I don't need all of you, I just need a quorum. It's kind of the same thing with you guys. I would need all 3 of you, but I would need a quorum, so I need 2 of you if we were to do this. Now, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But what that facilitates for myself and for IOWN staff is that instead of 4 hearings, we're going to 2 hearings. We still have to manage the process. It's the first hearing from the Planning Commission. It's then a recommendation to the Board of Commissioners. And both entities still make decisions, but that's kind of the benefit, Jim. Mm-hmm. It's a time and cost of notice situation. So at this point, and I don't have an application yet from Linda. We've still got some timelines to meet, but we would currently be looking at Tuesday, July 11th. That is the night that the IOWN City Council meets And if two of you would be available for that evening, it would be in IOM. We don't know the specific time. It would probably be 6 p.m. Or thereabouts. It would be in IOM, and I don't imagine this to be a controversial request. So it's probably, you know, an hour. Drive time is probably going to take longer than the
I hearing. Think since we don't ever meet in IOM, I would be happy to do that. It kind of feels like a good opportunity for us to participate in a meeting in IOM, and that I think that would be great.
And I think it shows support for their project and for their community and that economic opportunity that they're looking at.
And how does Linda have standing?
How does Linda have standing?
Yes.
To be the applicant?
Yes.
The city council has asked her to complete this project.
Yeah.
So she's just working on behalf of the city.
Just thinking, because that has to happen at some level.
Right.
Just came in to, just a citizen thought it'd be good to come in.
No. When the project started, she was the mayor.
Yeah.
And she's worked with Rod Taylor, the new mayor, and the city council there, and they've asked her to help facilitate moving this project to completion. And she's willing to do that. I think one of the things is that, of course, sidelined her a bit over the past year was, you know, when her husband passed. So,
zoning ordinance.
So the Port of Morrow zoning ordinance amendment, we've received a little bit more complete application from the court. We're working to, at this point, I think the decision that has been made is we're working to relocate the site development review standards from our general provisions into specifically the Speedway overlay zone. It's why it was developed. It has been somewhat limiting to develop in the port. So we'll further define and explain all of that in the staff report and the analysis that happens. But it is another application that has been received. And we'll be working that, of course, through the hearings process, first with the Planning Commission. You guys probably won't see this at this point in time until July sometime, would be my guess.
Those are the lands.
So that's a conversation that's been happening at the Economic Development Task Force for a while, during Budget Committee. Was that just last week?
Yeah.
Chair Lindsay brought up putting a little money aside for that. There was another $30,000 that was identified in the building permit fund for kind of some community planning, and buildable lands inventory is one of those items. We did talk about this a little bit yesterday at the Economic Development Task Force meeting. There seems to be some good general support around this from the communities. I think the communities are willing to figure out how to kind of put their own skin in the game with some money themselves. The smallest communities may not be able to do that, but I think IOM and Irrigan and Boardman will. Heppner may.
Cody thought they could.
Yeah. So we'll be working over the next couple of months to figure out. It's at a cost that's probably going to require an RFP. We'll send that out to a couple of different consulting firms. We're going to have to frame it and figure out just what exactly we want. So it'll just be planning work we'll be working on. We'll be staffing the project from the perspective of managing it, but we'll be working with consultants to actually do the work.
I think we need to definitely have a contribution. I think there has to be, it can be small, but there has to be a dollar investment just to be vested in the project. And I also want to hear clearly, I personally want to hear clearly each individual city say, yay. I'm not sure I've heard Karen say it loudly.
Right.
And I'm not sure Jeanette from Lexington, which they're probably the city that has no monetary, but I think her and her city council need to make a commitment.
Right.
Or it doesn't make sense to spend county money on it.
Right. And for her, she's not in a position where she can make a commitment. She's got to take it back to her council. Once we have an RFP, I think that'll give her council something. And I'm happy to go to her council meeting and help her with that process.
Perfect.
And I think they'll be engaged. And I think if the I think if you're willing to accept the dollar contribution, I think you'll be successful with Lexington on that level. If it's a $2,000 contribution, I don't think they can get there.
Yeah.
particularly since we're not going to have a small jurisdiction grant, most likely in this next go around.
Yeah, I think they only get like $8,000 or $10,000 in property taxes to run their city budget on.
Yeah.
So $2,000 would be.
And probably no monetary, most likely from Ione. I've heard Cody and Aaron and Karen all mention they maybe had a few dollars that.
Right.
It's just more of a buy-in to me.
Right.
Right.
Right. So we'll be taking kind of the RFP or that framework back to the Economic Development Task Force, and I will ask them at that time to provide us with a council approval, or if they feel as city manager they can do that themselves, to provide us something in writing, and then what their financial contribution. They wouldn't have to make that contribution until next fiscal year, but then we'd like to know what that would be and what their.
And I guess I kind of tossed that out because I'd been listening to it, and I personally was a supporter of it at the budget at kind of the last minute, and I don't know that the three of us really completely said, yay, that's something we want to see her spend county funds on. So I guess I want to make sure that the buildable lands study is something we're supporting that she has done.
What it'll define for us, and not just for the county with our rural residential lands, but also for all of the cities, is an analysis of just what do you have available. And what we're supposed to, through the land use planning process, make sure that we have a 20-year land supply to meet our needs for housing and for economic opportunity. So I'm proposing that this buildable lands inventory look at residential land as well as employment land, so land zone for industrial commercial use. Do we have a 20-year supply, and does each community have a 20-year supply for what may happen in those communities? It's an analysis, some of it's groundwork to help us better answer the housing question. I mean, I think we're approaching the housing question from a lot of different ways, and this just gives us another tool in our toolbox to make sure that a community actually has available land supply. And it's a difference between, is it zoned properly and is it available? And I think we have to look at both. Is it zoned properly? Yes. But is it actually available? In Heppner, there was an analysis done some 15 years ago when I first started that said they have all kinds of land that is zoned properly, but because of steep slopes and the ability to provide services, they had very little land that was actually available. And so there's really two questions in that. Same thing if you have non-willing landowners. It might be zoned properly, but if they're waiting for the $1 million payout, it's probably not practically available.
Those are questions that I want to get answered, because I know that there's limited, room on their water sewer system here in Heppner. Mm-hmm. And Lexington and Ione have non-existent sewer systems.
Right.
I thought that there was probably more room on the Irrigan water sewer system than Aaron and Mayor Heath told me there was here today.
Yeah.
So,
their limitation is where they are in their conversion process and the cost limitations for that conversion process.
Yeah.
Well, my hope was that maybe everyone would begin to think out of the box a little bit. I feel like everyone has a feel for their city, but it's historic, and maybe, is it tunnel? Is there some out of the box that we could all as a county and cities be thinking? And that was kind of Carla thought maybe it could bring, and I feel like that's important.
Right. We've learned a lot the last 3 years with the money through the CREZ process, that infusion into housing. We've learned a lot about what's out there and what's on the ground and what that housing stock is. But I don't think we really have a good understanding of what other available land there is. There was a conversation here in Heppner about a year ago, and I was a little frustrated. WICVED's leading the process. I'm a little frustrated because it was like they talked about a lot of options, and then they immediately shrunk it down to they're just going to pursue one. And it's like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, I was really disappointed in that, because it's like, let's look at some opportunity for some rural residential exception lands.
Yeah.
I was open to that, and they just shut that door completely.
And that's a little bit of out of the box that I hoped it would bring, and you thought it would bring. And Aaron brought some good points about curb appeal, and you know, maybe that will open some eyes on that issue as well. And mm-hmm. And the conversations about wastewater systems and water systems. Hey, we do have this or that. Let's think a little bigger. That was my hope.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I've been trying to think of ways we can get, you know, with the additional SIP monies that could be coming in. I mean, it's realistic to think that we could get more SIP money than general property tax dollars in Morrill County. You know, if Jerry's project goes forward, it looks like it is, and the PGE projects go forward and they enter into SIP agreements, and we're looking at a lot of dollars in SIP dollars. And right now, the way we spend those is the taxing agencies that have standing get a little bit of money, and the county gets a lot of money. And, I mean, it's okay for the county to get a lot of money, I guess. But in the enterprise zone, the way we've distributed that out, none of the taxing districts have really gotten any money out of it other than we try and keep whole the emergency services component of it. And then we've spread that money out to the regions of the county and let them decide how they want to spend it for the best local public benefit. So I've been trying to figure out how we do that with some SIP money potentially. I know in the enterprise zone agreements that we allow those companies to self-direct a portion of their taxing dollars. So they can donate to anything within Morrill County. And with a local developer like Jerry Reitman, it may be easy to get him to have those conversations and allow that. But if you end up with an out-of-area company that doesn't have, because wind energy companies typically have a lot of local employees, it wouldn't have the same effect.
So if you're negotiating the SIP with Jerry Reitman and then he sells it to Florida
Power and Light,
then where are we at?
Well, they would still have to, if they're going to make a donation, it'd have to be, the way the enterprise zone ones work, it has to be an approved Morrill County nonprofit or governmental agency. Like in the case of VA Data, they had some...
they did the internships.
Yeah, they did some internships, but they weren't... And they wanted to get tax credit for the money they spent on the internships, which we would have allowed them if they were Morrill County interns.
Yeah.
But they weren't.
Right.
So they had to pay some money.
I mean, we're not going to allow them to do an internship for somebody in Edmonds, Washington.
Yeah. I want to...
Do you support the buildable lands inventory study?
We already gave her the money.
Yeah.
We didn't give her the money. We at the last minute, I said... pad that with this, and she just has a padded thing for
$30,000.
All of this, and so
it's buildable land. I mean, it's a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, I think there are conditions that we need to meet.
It's a lot of money we give that we don't necessarily have to be connected to.
Yeah, I think we need to get buy-in from each one of the communities, and there are conditions before, and I think Carl is aware of our concerns.
Okay, good.
So.
Yeah, and
that's what I didn't want you to feel like, as we already gave.
And Melissa threw $15,000 in, and I had already talked about the fact that we're not going to get the small jurisdiction. You know, there's a big possibility we're not going to get our small jurisdiction grants, which is us and our four smallest communities. That's a loss of between $8,000 and $10,000 to the communities. We had some plans for that money this next biennium, and I think with that $15,000, that $30,000, we won't get it all spent in this fiscal year. You know, this fiscal year it's budgeted in, but because it's in that fund, it can sit there. I think that between buildable lands and some other things that we've talked about with the communities, I think that's a potential $30,000 investment into community planning for the county and all of our communities, and for our smallest communities, that's huge.
Yeah,
that's huge for that.
Okay, the next one.
Real briefly, just to answer one thing Don was talking about, I agree a lot of times this money is better spent, you know, if you give it to the local. But sometimes I think that we are challenged with taking a paternalistic approach to the county. And if it means that, okay, Heppner, Ione, and Lexington, we're going to do a damn water treatment plant for you, then we have, you know.
Yeah. Right.
You have to take that approach.
Right. And where I come from on the enterprise zone committee, there's some heartache that we take all the enterprise zone money and we distribute it out to all parts of the county, but the county keeps all the SIP money and doesn't distribute it out.
Yeah.
I mean, they take money from an industrial plant built inside the city limits of Boardman and give some to Willow Creek Valley Economic Development. And if it were on the tax rolls, Willow Creek Valley Economic Development would not get any of that money. Now, everybody sees the need to help you know, the south end of the county that's, you know, isolated geographically, try and do what we can for them. But there was that feeling that the previous commission on the county didn't have that same feeling, that it's just a way to backfill their budget.
Yeah.
Before we move
to that. So those are some of the things that and our partners on that are the Port of Morrill, and four of their five commissioners live in the south end of the county, and the city of Boardman, and then the county, so. But anyway, those are thoughts that go on, and I guess I'm aware of those thoughts when I look at, you know, how much SIP money does the county need.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that our road budget could take it all pretty easily, but at the same time, how do we help the communities?
Yeah.
I want to add one potential negotiator to your list of SIP that are coming. I've not shared this with the Enterprise Zone Board yet. I'm going to be doing that, but you will see on your November, what month is this, May? On your May 17th agenda, a conversation with VA Data. They have evaluated their opportunities under different tax abatement programs, and they've decided they want to pursue a SIP agreement.
So
all those challenges you just discussed are going to become threefold.
Right. So I got a call from Doris Penwell. Do you know Doris?
I do.
And she said that one of our data companies had called her about the pending legislation on SIP, the one that makes it, you know, right now we've got the urban and the rural, and mm-hmm. Betsy Johnson is sponsoring the one.
Right.
And they wanted to postpone the execution date on that. And so the only place they're active is Morrill and Umatilla County. And so I had a quick conversation, and my opinion was I don't really want them in the SIP agreement. We can, I guess, massage an enterprise zone agreement to match a SIP agreement, but I would rather have them in an enterprise zone agreement.
That was my,
so we can get money to, I guess, our partners, Wolf Creek Valley Economic Development and the city of Erieken and the city of Boardman, rather than all come through the county funds.
I guess I wouldn't necessarily agree with that, but I don't know whose decision that is to make or negotiate.
But so, or I guess I wouldn't, and that wasn't the big deal, but the new SIP agreement requires them to pay more in taxes than the old SIP agreement.
Right, the change in the...
And so I wouldn't want to push that back, so they get to take advantage of, because the SIP agreements were really written for large industrial projects in Washington County. They didn't think anybody would build a large industrial project anywhere besides the Portland metro area, but they made a smaller scale version of a SIP agreement for rural areas. And so they don't pay as much tax to the taxing districts like the county...
Cemetery district or...
Yeah, or the hospital district or the school districts or the... any one of those broad-reaching districts, if it's in a fire district or something. So this new one would require them to pay more to those districts and less to this available discretionary to the county. And I mean, I think that's the way to go. The AOC has supported that. It comes out of Columbia County because they've got a large, what is it, a methanol plant? Methanol plant or something. Some type of large energy plant that's going to go in there for export, and it'll be a billion-plus dollar project. And it works out well for anybody in a rural area that gets a large project. So I told Doris that I, you know, personally wasn't in favor of her not testifying for it, and these guys that she mentioned said that they weren't going to be public with it. But I think we can negotiate anything we want through the enterprise zone agreement, or if they want a SIP agreement, they can follow the new SIP rules.
Right. So at this point in time, in my conversations with representatives from that company, they've asked to be able to meet with the Board of Commissioners and they've asked for the opportunity for an executive session should the conversation go to that point, the first conversation. If you agree to enter into negotiations with them, they did say, because I have some history with the company, they'd like me to participate on a negotiating team. So I've prepped the agenda cover sheet that just, it's pretty high level, it doesn't have a lot of detail, and it identifies Jerry, myself, Mike Gorman, and a commissioner to be determined to serve on the negotiating team. But your conversation with them might lead them back to the Enterprise Zone Board. I mean, it just kind of depends on, but they have made the choice at this point with their understanding of, you know, where the Enterprise Zone requirements are and where the SIP requirements are, that they want to pursue the SIP agreement.
Interesting, because originally when they were the ones that chose the five-year Enterprise Zone agreement. They didn't push to go to 15, and you know, we probably would have let them go to 15 with a, you know, different tax structure and different agreements, but at that time they thought 5 years was an eternity.
Right, and they're now looking at, you know, maybe 15 years, and the conversation about the rural long-term, I think they're concerned that the rural long-term, that bill won't be successful, and that may not be an available option to them. So if that bill is successful, then it might be easier to push them back to the Enterprise Zone.
Yeah.
I guess I feel in my role, it's not my role to push them to one mechanism or another, but simply when they ask the question to push to introduce them to the people who can facilitate that conversation. Mm-hmm. And so for an Enterprise Zone agreement, it's clearly the Enterprise Zone Board.
Right.
For a SIP agreement, it's clearly you. How your conversation goes with them.
We have as much freedom with SIP money, though, as there is with CREZ money.
We have more freedom with SIP money than with CREZ money. We, this board.
Well, I mean, if we want to give it to Willow Creek Development, et cetera,
yeah.
we can do initiatives with it, yes?
I think we can, yeah. I just know in past practices, and I haven't been involved in the SIP agreement, but there was a lot of heartache when the Enterprise Zones first came about. So to give you a little history on that, there was a gentleman's understanding that since the port brought the companies to the table, they were going to be part of the Enterprise Zone negotiations originally in the original Columbia River Enterprise Zone. And now it's the Columbia River Enterprise Zone 2. And so the port brought the entities to the table. They felt like they had some inside information that might help in those negotiations. Ports weren't necessarily
allowed as
sponsors of the Enterprise Zone. It was just cities and counties at that time. And at the last minute, the county commission at that time, and that was pre-Leanne Ray, decided they didn't want the port sticking their nose in where it didn't belong. And so they excluded them.
But they were legally supposed to be excluded.
At that point, there wasn't an opportunity yet legislatively for a port to be a sponsor.
Right. But
that legislation changed. And so when we...
Yeah, but there was an agreement, just a gentleman's agreement amongst the commission and the port and the city that the port was going to be at the table when they negotiated.
Okay.
And so the county said, no, we don't need you, we don't want you. So the port went down and had the law changed. And then there was heartache on the county's part that the port had the law changed. And there's been turnover, but that's some of the history between the county and the port, and there has been friction a lot of times. I think that the relationship is really good right now.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the history of the Enterprise Zone, I guess, and how the port got in there.
Yeah. And the current...
And I really thought when Doris was talking to me that Umatilla County was probably the one that had mentioned SIP agreements to Amazon and tried to push them into a SIP agreement, because I think Umatilla County's had some budget issues lately and they probably wanted to backfill their budget, was my thought process.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on over there, but they have a new site in Umatilla County that's not in the current Umatilla Enterprise Zone.
Right.
So they have a history with the Umatilla Enterprise Zone that they're not going to have with this new facility. So I know that they've tried to have commonality in some respects between the two counties and those tax abatement programs. So maybe by feeling like they're shifting to a SIP over there, they want to mirror it here. I don't know what's driving their request. It was just simply their request.
Yeah, I think it would be really interesting to look at the Enterprise Zone agreement they have with the city of Umatilla.
I will see if
we can get a copy of that. Mm-hmm. So I don't have heartache if they want to go to a SIP agreement. I do have a little bit of heartache if they want to delay the change in the SIP agreement.
The legislative change,
because I think the legislative change is to the advantage of local taxing districts.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Sure. I mean, how do we look at the Unified Recreation District and say, yeah, we got this new $1 billion project in here, and oh yeah, you're not getting any money, we're keeping it all.
Yeah.
That's always been a... Anyway.
So...
Yeah.
Thank you for... anyway, so you have a little preview there of your agenda 2 weeks out. Last item in here, comprehensive plan, zoning ordinance, and transportation system plan updates. A couple years ago, I pitched the idea to the Planning Commission and the County Court and said, it's really out of date, we need to work on it. And we have been steadily making improvements. Capacity continues to be, we're trying to build the capacity of staff to do this work. I do think we're getting closer to the point where Stephanie and Stephen will both be at a point where they can actually take on some of the code writing. Now, code writing is not a simple thing.
No.
and to be honest, it took me a long time before I felt comfortable writing code. I wouldn't want to just throw somebody the wolves and say, go try to write that code. But I think they're both, Stephanie in particular, I think is getting to the point where she's going to have some... she's gaining some experience and should be able to start taking on some of that so we can kind of spread that work around. So, and then trying to get to what we want to do when we're dealing with applications like update to the TSP update or the Governor's Advisory Committee report or the Ion Urban or the Port of Africa. I mean, those things, those are applications and you have to respond to those. So at that point in time, you have to look at your capacity and say, well, we're going to take, it's like the economic element. We planned for 9 months and it took us about 15 because in the middle of all that, we had to pull it off the plate and put something else out there. I'm trying to be respectful of the fact that, I don't want the Planning Commission to be there for 5 hours, but you also have an agenda and you have to figure out how to get through it. So it's an intricate balance in, how do you do that? Ask them to come a little early and feed them pizza. Well, as long as we continue to have that line item and you guys are good with that, that's an enticement and they're willing to do that. So it's kind of figuring out how to balance that.
Right. And that has been an issue that I thought about. We're asking volunteers to stay for a 4 or 5 hour meeting and half of them have an hour drive home.
Right.
So.
Right.
And you and I have talked about it before, but just be mindful of the...
Yeah. Well, sometimes I have that hour drive home. So,
right.
Depending on what end of the county, we're in that same boat. And so we do try to be respectful. We try.
Right.
There are times, there are circumstances. If it's a public hearing, you're going to be there until you're done. We're trying to figure that out and balance that. Ask them to come a little early, feed them a little pizza... and we're working on that. Currently, we've got two things that based on discussion, staff and with the Planning Commission are kind of out there that we're moving around. We're toying with. Article 2 is there's a table in Article 2 that's a pretty simple table. But what it does is it lists all of the use zones in Article 3. And it's out of date. It probably hasn't been updated since 2001 when we codified the zoning ordinance. And we've added a couple of use zones. We've taken a couple away. So it's really a housekeeping. It's kind of a one-page housekeeping item. And the Planning Commission said, yeah, move that through. And I think I brought that to the county court last fall sometime. Anyway.
I can't remember what article, I did last week, let alone last fall.
Me too. Article 9, a little bit different animal. Article 9 is our administrative procedures chapter. One of the things not included in our administrative procedures chapter is a clear description of how decisions are made. In the planning world, those are called decision types. Generally, they're labeled type 1, 2, 3, and 4. With words, those are ministerial, administrative, quasi-judicial, and legislative. Because those are not clearly delineated in our code, we have somewhat ambiguous language about how decisions are made and then how appeals are done, and it's this kind of generic language, and it doesn't get into any real clarity relative to specific actions. So by adding decision types, we're working to add some clarity about how decisions are made. The follow-up work to that, as we work through all the rest of the code update, is going to be working with the Planning Commission and with you in determining then who should make those decisions. They're really two different parts. If you don't know how you make decisions, you can't make a decision about who should be making the decision. So an Article 9 update and an incorporation of those decision types gives you clear requirements for how a decision is done when it's done ministerially, how it's done if it's done administratively, how it's done if it's quasi-judicial, and how it's done if it's legislative. What then happens is as we go through what's on the bottom, these bullet points at the bottom, as we make changes to our residential zones or to our industrial or commercial zones, that's when we would then say, okay, we've established how we make decisions. Now, given this list of uses, who should be making the decision? Is it a staff level decision? Is it an administrative decision with notice? Is it a quasi-judicial decision? Is this something that has enough discretion that the Planning Commission should be hearing this in a public hearing? And then legislative decisions are pretty straightforward. That's where you're changing the law. So that's the discussion that the Planning Commission has been having. They are asking questions. There's a lot of new members on there. And 7 of them have said, yes, we want to have this conversation. Clearly, 2 I just haven't had a chance to talk to. But 7 of them have said, we want to have the opportunity to have a discussion about how decisions are made. And then we want to have a conversation about who should be making decisions. They feel that there's decisions coming to them that could be done through a notice, through an administrative process. So notice to the neighbors. If there's no comment, then the decision is issued by a staff level notice of decision. So that's coming from what would now be a majority of the Planning Commission members. And so some of the Article 9 conversation is responding. We've been trying to engage that conversation from the staff level for a long time. Tamara has started that conversation some almost 20 years ago. But we now have a majority of the Planning Commission who is interested in understanding how decisions are made, creating a more clear process by which those decisions, so you know how they're made, and then understanding there's still a lot of work after that to clarify then who makes those decisions. Work beyond that, at this point in time, you know, the things that have come to us by application and then the couple of things we've identified is kind of the last paragraph in my written report there. Transportation system plan update. We do need to do that. Yes, we're updating the Appendix B, but the whole transportation system plan was last significantly updated in 2005. It was a minor update relative to some of the numbers in 2012, but we've not done a crash analysis or real intersection analysis in a long time. And so at some point in time, the TSP update was identified as one of those major components to accomplish. We also, since the 2005 timeframe, have adopted 4 interchange area management plans and a corridor refinement plan on Highway 730, and they're not well, in some cases, they're not reflected at all in our full TSP, and so we need to connect all those. So that's a transportation system plan update. course, we would coordinate that with Public Works, make sure we do the lion's share of that work during a time of the year when Matt and Burke would have a little bit of availability to help us with that. So that's kind of winter work. Goal 10 housing update and related updates to the residential components of the zoning ordinance. The buildable lands inventory would actually be kind of a front end to this, and then based on that, we'd go in and look at our goal 10 and our comprehensive plan based on the buildable lands update that, and then once you do the comprehensive plan work, turn around and do the comparable work in the zoning ordinance. So we're actually looking at our residential zones and saying, are we allowing the right kinds of things? Are our densities right? What are opportunities of how we might change things on the ground? We've already adopted an updated economic element. What we didn't do after that is take that information and better inform our commercial and our industrial zones. So are there things that we could change in our industrial and commercial zones? Plus there's some general housekeeping that we could do in both of those zones. We've had a long-standing request from the billboard industry to more clearly delineate where billboards are allowed. And we currently don't allow energy facilities in our general industrial zone. And that's where the Cardi generating plant is, and PGE is. They're on land that's zoned for general industrial, but because it's not a use authorized, they have to go through the goals process. And then cleanup of goal 14, urbanization and review of community urban growth boundaries. I think there's an overarching question is where are communities with their urban growth boundaries and how can we help them with that? And the Goal 14 urbanization chapter in our comp plan has all of these amendments that have happened over time, and it's just a real junky chapter where there's the original text and then a lot of just ordinances that have been shoved in there that could be cleaned up. So none of that last bullet list has been vetted with the Planning Commission. Those are simply kind of that's what's been going on in my head. That's not in an order. I mean, it's not numbered 1, 2, 3, 4 because it's not 1, 2, 3, 4. I don't know which one of those should come next. I don't think it's my decision to make. I think that's a conversation for the Planning Commission to have and for you guys to confirm or agree with and have input into.
Okay. Who's chair of your Planning Commission currently?
Jeff Wenholz.
Okay.
And Miff Devlin is the vice chair.
Okay, was Miff chair just previous?
No.
Dave Sykes was. And then Jeff stepped into that? Okay.
And Jeff was vice chair. Right. So
when Dave resigned, then Jeff took over chair.
Jeff moved up and Miff came in, yeah.
Okay. Somehow I read that wrong. You're right, man. I have to write that down on paper. I was wrong. Missy was right.
I still get it wrong. At the last Planning Commission meeting, I said, Vice Chair Wenholz. He's like, I'm chair now. I was like, oh, yeah, it even says it on the paper, and I can't read it right. So
I would just say we started at 1:30, 2:30, 3:30, two and a half hours, which is fine. It's a good discussion. 2.5 hours, and the Planning Commission the other night started at 7, 8. At 9:30, you said, we have another hour of work to do. And they're nice. They all said, okay. But I don't care. I don't care about this anymore. And I do. I really care about this and I want to have a conversation about it because I have a strong opinion. My point is that after 2.5 hours, your Planning Commission, they didn't care. No one was listening. They were glossed over. And I appreciate your energy, and I appreciate your work in wanting to. I think you have a goal of leaving some nice wrapped boxes when you go, and I respect that 110%. I feel like for our Planning Commission to survive, we have good members, and I know for a fact we're going to lose some if we continue down this road. I want them to make planning decisions. And I want them to make the planning decisions they make now. You know, I differ with your opinion, and the past commission differed with your opinion to rewrite Article 9. There's a few people on there pushing it. I don't think it's 7 of 9, but that's a whole other conversation. But I think that we're going to lose people, and they're going to be hard to replace if we continue to have 3, 4, 5, 6 hours. And it's not just the 3, 4, 5 hours. If they're doing the job I hope they're doing, they've spent 2 hours previewing. Well, that's not happening either. And so I believe we need to slow this down, and unfortunately, your goal of nice boxes left won't get met. I want them to make, my opinion, I want them to make planning decisions. If there's an hour left to talk about the model code or comprehensive plan, then you talk about it, and if 9:30, 9 o'clock hits, it's done. We close the book, we go home, and we maintain a planning commission that is doing what we want them to do, and that's make planning decisions. I don't know that a warm and fuzzy of rewriting all of these, I don't know that rewriting our comprehensive plan is a high priority. It's not to me. And I don't know that it gets us from A to B. Now, what you've done with the forest and farm use, I think that's a great thing. That needed to be done. You've taken all the state. You had great help in doing that. But if we back up to just them making the decisions they should be making, that's 9 times out of 10 less than an hour meeting. And you just went through adding 8 more things to the rewrite list. With all respect, I appreciate that, but it can't sustain with a good commission. It can't. And they're not doing a good job if they're not previewing it and able to listen any longer to you, just like I'm not doing a good job right now communicating because I'm a little tired. That's my thought.
So I have one other question, too, and I don't know when this went away, but when I was a planning commissioner, we got reimbursed mileage.
And it was a tax. It's a tax change. It has to do with the whole. What are they called? The 1099s.
But you don't get a 1099 for reimbursement of an expense.
So it may be worth having that conversation with Kate.
Mm-hmm.
So did we ever do it when you were the planning director?
Yes, we did. We did it for a while, and some changes came out of account, or some commentary came out of accounting. You're really taking me back. I mean, okay. This is probably been more than 2 years ago we changed this.
I know it was a long time ago.
Something came out of accounting. We went to the planning commission. We had a conversation about what that looks like. And they agreed, and it was that planning commission agreed that they would rather not be reimbursed than have the tax implication question. So, I don't remember the specifics of what the issue was. I just know it revolved around the 1099 and how it had to be reported.
Good conversation for Kate, maybe.
Yeah, because I know when I was a commissioner for the Port of Morrow, we got paid the maximum allowable under state law.
Which it's a big job.
$50 a meeting or $50 a day, whichever was less.
I also plus
mileage.
Yeah. I also think we can allow a stipend. I think, as opposed to I'm not positive on that, but I would think.
I don't know about the stipend thing.
Yeah, I mean, we're able to do it with county council, with the surveyor. Things like, well, I mean, back when it was $3,000 and those things didn't add into their, it was a different deal. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a tough ask to do the planning stuff. It really isn't. I don't know. I think the comp plan. I mean, it's goes back to the 80s, you know. And I think too that of course I wasn't on the deal with it. I think. The road committee and the whatever committees they are, I think we need to kind of be respectful of what direction they want to go.
And applications that come up that aren't
Yeah, effective. Sure, yeah.
But the planning commission is the one where we, the meetings are half the time in the north end of the county and half the time in the south end of the county. And, I don't know, we ask a lot of them, and if we can ask them not to come out of their pocket to travel there and back, maybe that's something we should look
that's
at.
That's a good
again.
Idea.
Yeah.
Well, that's part of the reason I've been willing to buy the pizza. I mean, we'll buy pizza more than once a year, because if we're not doing the mileage reimbursement, are there other things we can do?
Yeah.
So that's kind of where the let's have pizza on a regular basis, yeah. Or let's have a birthday cake on occasion, yeah. And so we try to do those things. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make up for a mileage reimbursement. But I'll reach out to Kate and have that conversation. It wouldn't be something that wouldn't be in our budget for this next year, but there's probably money in there that we could,
yeah,
we know what it would
be.
Out.
Speaking of budget, and I'm sure, We need to have you back for another discussion. Yeah. I think we could discuss for another 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Legitimately, but
yeah.
I was kind of interested that we siloed, for lack of a better term, $150,000.
Right. So go to that last bullet list in your document there, because I told Notes I would touch on this and I forgot to include it in here. When we do that transportation system plan update, we don't have technical expertise in the county. We don't have a traffic engineer on staff. A TSP update's going to run, for that technical expertise, probably between $40,000 and $50,000. Mm. So the Goal 10 housing update and the related updates to residential components and zoning ordinance, we'll have the buildable lands inventory, and we do have a different supply. I mean, initially I was thinking that buildable lands and that would come out of that 150. We put that other money in there that would support that countywide, not just for the county itself, but for the communities as well. But to do the secondary work to that, I mean, if we have a buildable lands inventory, you really should look at Goal 10. What is Goal 10 really? What is your... I'm going to challenge your position a little bit, Melissa. Because our comprehensive plan is technically almost 40 years old.
Sure.
Those policy statements, they govern your decisions. Mm-hmm. And those policy statements were made 40 years ago.
Sure.
Maybe they're still okay, but could they, should they be reflective of where we are today? And maybe some of them are still holistic enough, you can make them work.
And if we stuck with just the rewrite of that plan instead of now we've got these other 10, I wouldn't disagree. But it gets lost and we jump over to something else, and now we're still trying to do both and we're there for 4 hours. So yeah, if your choice is the comprehensive plan and then it rolls off and we stick with it, I don't disagree with that. If at 9:30 we don't get it done, we close it and we go home. I agree. It's the comp plan plus all these other things that I know you think are important and probably are. At the same time, it's got to be one or the other to me.
So we probably need to have this in another
sure.
point in time when we're
sure.
all fresh. And
yeah, yeah. Agreed.
And we can talk about it then. But to get back to your question with $150,000, so $40,000 to $50,000 would be the transportation system plan. As we work to, and it's not currently on this list, but when we get to Goal 5, which is our natural resources goal, I'm not a wildlife biologist, and I'm not a cultural and archaeologist, and we don't have any of those folks on staff. So to do that necessary inventory and to do the update to that Goal 5, we're going to go out there. We're probably going to want as bite my tongue as I say this, but we're going to want to engage the tribes, cultural unit. We're going to want to hire them so that we're not they can have that purchased input. We don't have to accept it, but
right.
we can have that input. We're going to need one of the wildlife consultant teams. We're going to need them to help us because ODF&W is going to say this is deer winter range, and we're going to say yeah, but. And we're going to want to have our own biologists that we've hired that can counter, and so that when we balance those decisions, we have an opportunity to balance it. So when you start adding those things up, Jim, that's where the expense is. It's expense in buying technical expertise that we don't have.
Sure. And I guess part of what I was asking is why, especially with planning as opposed to maybe some of the others, that it's just not held in a contingency in the budget as opposed to...
Well, so when so the general fund, you spend it, and if you don't spend it, it rolls back into the general fund to be reallocated. In the building permit fund, it can be held. And that's something that, to be honest, wasn't clear to me prior to this budget year and working with Kate and Jerry, because my understanding last year working with Rick was that we said we're gonna account for $100,000 and we're gonna put it, you know, we're gonna show it as a transfer into planning. And my understanding in talking to Rick was he wouldn't transfer that money unless we spent it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Kate's position is you put it in the budget, I have to transfer it. So I don't want to show it as a transfer. I just want to spend it. I want to hold it and retain it in the building permit fund, and we're going to spend it out of the building permit fund.
And I was trying to understand
right.
whether it can be moved or can be held or has to be.
In the building permit fund, it can be held.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Once you initiate the transfer, you have to transfer.
But it could
It could be transferred. Yes, if we knew that we needed to transfer $10,000 for a specific thing in the planning department fund, in the planning department general fund, we could transfer that over to account for that. Yeah, and we did that a couple of years ago, because Mike needed a software update, or I don't remember what it was, but we used $10,000 of a building permit fund, and we identified that as a transfer to the assessor. We transferred it to his budget, and then he was able to expend it.
Right, and I think there are some sideboards on how you spend that building department money, and Jerry's not real clear on how you can spend it and how you can't, I think, is part of the issue. He's very conservative, doesn't want to step outside the line and get anybody in trouble, and after our conversation, and I know that with the city board, because they do run the building department, and then they give the county part of that money as part of our negotiation.
Right.
So the city board has some really fast sideboards on theirs. And Karen Pettigrew thought that the county had more flexibility than Jerry did. So I think Jerry's going to check that out a little bit.
I think we do have more flexibility. We're one step removed. When you go read the statute for building codes, if building codes collects money, it has to be spent on building codes. I mean, it's just, and I think for Brett, those same kind of statutory limitations are going to be directly applicable. But when you take the one step away to us, I don't think you would, I think you could be challenged if you decided to fund Sherry Smith and public health with it. But I think when you talk about planning and maybe some other related things, I think there's a lot of leeway.
Yeah, I will tell you that Jerry and Karen and I had a really good conversation yesterday around that. And, you know, Karen's got this big surplus that keeps building. And one of the ideas that Jerry had for us, why don't you waive building fees and charge system development charges? Because they've done the opposite. They waive system development charges and then charge the building fee. But system development charges are discretionary.
Right.
So I think having conversations and getting creative people in the same room, sometimes you come up with ideas that you don't think of on your own. And so that's the benefit of having those good working relationships.
I appreciate being able to see
you. Okay.
I'd appreciate some additional conversation on those funds, because I know we're approaching $500,000 in the fund, and
right. And
you know, I actually had identified a number of things to spend, and one of them was a new vehicle for planning to come out of there. And Jerry, like, well, let's just take that out of general fund dollars. And I'm thinking, why not you save general fund dollars for general fund needs and let me buy my car out of it? But that was a budget decision he made.
Right. And I think it's because he's taken a very conservative approach on how we spend those dollars. And I think after talking with Karen yesterday, between Karen and Jerry, they're going to find out more on that. And his very conservative approach might become a little bit more flexible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really appreciate your time today.
We appreciate yours. This is a great conversation.
So,
great.
Do we want to schedule another one of these at some point in the...
Yeah, we'll see how things go down the road.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, definitely.
Are we adjourned?
We are adjourned. At 4 o'clock.
Thanks, Roland.